Good morning. Okay, so welcome to the conference. I'm going to talk this morning as part of the gas and stars in the central parsecs of the galaxy. I'm going to talk about dense molecular gas in the central 2 parsecs of the galaxy. Now you're sitting there, you're drinking your coffee, you're saying, wait a second. I signed up for a conference on stars in the central tens of parsecs and a supermassive black hole. Okay, and now you're standing up here saying, molecular gas, many parsecs, oh, go get a break. So, you know, why? So what's going on? Well, maybe that's why I'm first. But also, I think that understanding the molecular gas in the central parsecs of the galaxy really provides a background or and a way to think about the region from the perspectives of both star formation and Sagittarius A star. So it's true, I'm not going to talk about Sag A star in the next 19 minutes and 30 seconds or whatever I have. I'm not going to talk very much about the particular stars, the kinematics. You know, that's all going to come later. There are going to be lots of details on that. But I am going to focus on this dense molecular gas because it's important to understand the environment in which all of this is happening. So just to make that point, you know, this whole conference was about paradoxes. And so I thought, well, here are my ideas, you may have different ideas, of what we're trying to resolve in the next few days. So we have paradoxes. So Sag A star, you know, we kind of know what it is now, but what's going on with it? Why is it so underluminous? What's the spectrum? Why is it variable? Do we understand the polarization? What's going on there? On the other hand, we have this whole paradox of youth involved with the stars and the central a few arc seconds. There appear to be everyday normal B stars, but how did they get there? You know, they're too young to have made it there. Maybe they are actually old and changed. Maybe they came in a cluster. So we have to understand all these things. And like I said, I'm not going to talk about the details, but I want to just give one semi-biased statement that all of this, when you get back to it, what's the answer? You can trace it all back to molecular gas. Right? Molecular gas. Eventually, you've got hundreds of thousands of solar masses of molecular gas in the central 5 to 10 parsecs of the galaxy. Dense clouds of gas. Eventually, it may take many steps, it's going to be the material that accretes down onto the supermassive black hole. The same thing. We've got all these stars we don't understand. Or you can't make stars if you don't have dense gas. So you've got to understand the dense gas to understand the stars. So today, I'm going to focus on molecular gas in the central parsecs of the galaxy. I'm going to do a slightly smaller scale than this, but I wanted to start with these cartoons. So these are cartoon renditions of what the central 10 parsecs of our galaxy looks like. Sag A star is there, the little black dot. The one on the left is the sky, in the plane of the sky. The two on the right are line of sight estimates, cartoon models of where everything is relative to each other. So you have Sag A star in the center. They're the arcs of the mini spiral in yellow here. These are arcs of dust, ionized gas that seem to be on orbits around Sag A star. And then you have the circumnuclear disk, which is drawn as a backwards C here. We'll get to that in a minute. But I just want to point out that while I'm going to focus in my talk on this region today, the central 2 parsecs, remember there are giant molecular clouds. Each of these clouds 100,000 or more solar masses of material. And this is the material that, you know, is around just waiting for something interesting to happen to it. So let's talk about, in honor of this conference on small scales, we'll zoom down in. I'm going to focus today on what's going on, what we've discovered in the central few parsecs of the galaxy. So again, here's an image of Sagittarius A West. Sag A star is the point source right there at the center, and you can see the ionized for the arcs of ionized gas and dust from Sagittarius A West. Now, if you look at the same region in a dense molecular tracer, for example, HCN 1 to 0, which is plotted over here in contours, you can see the contours form this backwards C shape. And this is the circumnuclear disk. Now, for all the theoreticians out there that are going to model the circumnuclear disk in their theories, I just want to point out a couple things. Nick Scoville is giving a talk tomorrow afternoon on the CND, so I'm not going to say much, but look at that. It's not a beautiful disk, right? It's lumpy, it's warped, it's missing a whole section down in here. So it's, you know, it's not a simple object. Yes, it does show a general sense of rotation with a line of sight velocity of about 110 kilometers per second, but it's not a simple feature. There's a lot going on here. Maybe this is where we can get shocks. cloud-cloud collisions that could give us interesting densities. So over the past few years, we've been interested in this region, and in particular, the fact that you have this nice ring, it circles mini-spiral, but that's where the HCN stopped. There wasn't any dense gas inside of that. And so we decided to try looking for dense molecular gas in other tracers. And in particular, we chose, instead of HCN, we chose ammonia. These are the rotation inversion transition lines at about 23 gigahertz. And we chose to look at these lines because they also trace very dense gas, but they're less affected by absorption along the line of sight and self-absorption. They have a higher energy above ground. So what do we see for the circumnuclear disk? So on the left, it's a velocity integrated image of the circumnuclear disk. There's the backward C. It's starting to kind of become familiar to you. So the first thing, oops, it's changed. Oh, great, so it changed since I did it last time. We're going to miss my punchline. That's okay. That's why you should run through all your slides. So we'll focus on this first. The circumnuclear disk here is a backward C shape, but you can see there's a molecular hole. Now, if you look at ammonia 3-3, velocity integrated ammonia 3-3, then you see, first of all, the circumnuclear disk is no longer obvious. It's not the dominant feature. If you looked at the central 10-6, it's not the feature you would pick out. There are some clumps that are the same, like on the west and the east. Those have the same kinematic profiles, but it's not what you would immediately guess. It doesn't look like a ring. And that's because the ammonia is not affected by self-absorption. If you go in and you look at the particular spectra here, you're going to see that the HCN is very self-absorbed. But in terms of the central 2-parsecs, when you have emission at the same place, it generally has the same kinematics. So we still had the same problem. Is there a hole in the central 2-parsecs? So you can look, you can say, why is there a hole? Well, maybe there's no molecular gas hole. Easy. Why else could there be a hole? Well, maybe there's no hole because there's actually molecular material in here, but it's at such a different temperature that it's not well traced in these lower transitions of ammonia. So this is ammonia 3-3. It has its energy of about 125 K above ground. But maybe it's the gas so close to that black hole, it's so hot that you're no longer populating that region. So we went back and we observed the same region, not in ammonia 3-3, but in 6-6, which is also at 1 centimeter. And this is what you get. So I had a nice color image on the page before, but it's disappeared. These molecular gas clouds can be kind of wily. They disappear. Here's one that's appeared now in the central parsec. So you have Sagittarius A star, you have the circumnuclear disk, 6-6 velocity, which is in velocity integrated emission and contours here, does have some emission on the west and the east that's part of the C&D. These are other features seen in the lower transitions of ammonia, but now there's this whole new gas cloud interior to the circumnuclear disk that we're picking up in 6-6 emission. So you say, wow, okay, so there's something in projection, right? We can't tie it directly to the nucleus. In projection, there's something new, and there's something right in front of the galactic center. So first of all, you might say, okay, well, this is great. You thought you might have hot gas, but does this really make sense? So why didn't we see it in 3-3? And can we get a temperature from that, from the line ratios? So if you take the line ratios of 6-6 to 3-3, and if you know the opacity, which you can actually calculate directly from ammonia lines because they have hyperfine splitting. If you take the line ratios, though, just the line ratios, throughout the whole central 10-parsec, so there's Sag A star and the mini spiral, we're focusing in on that area, then you'll see that the line ratios here are extraordinarily high. I'm going to give you a lower limit for now of 3. You'll see why that number is important in a second. So the line ratios within the central parsec from this new cloud of line ratios greater than 3. So why might this bother you? I mean, it may not bother you yet, but it should. So you want to calculate a rotational temperature. Right? You have this long equation, the opacity, the line ratio of the antenna temperatures of the two lines, the energy difference. But it's completely changed my talk. Next time I'm going through all the slides. So you can ignore this beautiful picture in the middle. We'll get to that later, I hope. But in order for this equation to have a solution, you can place a limit on the maximum value of the line ratio. It turns out There's a nice step in between here that you guys can do in your head now. And now there's a firm upper limit on the line rates you can get regardless of opacity, regardless of temperature. And 466-333, that's 2.3. So for a gas cloud in LTE, you cannot ever exceed 2.3. Now, if you say maybe you have two clouds in the beam, right? If they're both in LTE, they're not going to do it because they each have a value less than 2.3 and you take the weighted average, it's still going to be fine. All right, so something else has to be going on. So we went back, checking each figure now, see if it actually comes up as what I think it's going to be. So we went back and we looked at the spectra. So where do we get this high line ratio gas? So this is a spectrum of ammonia emission in both tracers taken towards Sagittarius A star. Immediately you can see that this isn't some simple, nice Gaussian component that we can easily understand. There's evidence for multiple components here, but this is the region associated with high 66-33 line ratios. And what I want you guys to notice is it's not, yes, there is a peak in the 66 there, but it's not like the 66 is shot, you know, way high, and that's why we have these almost infinite line ratios that come out to be. It's because in this region, the 33 is exactly zero within the errors. This happens throughout. Every time we get these really high line ratios that exceed the value, the maximum allowed value, it comes out that the 33 in that region is basically zero.
Isn't that already obvious spatially because you're letting in 33 emission in this region
alone? I'm just making it clear. Jeez, tough crowd. Okay, so what's going on? So since it's clear to everyone that it was zero, how can you get this? Obviously, the way you can get this easily, simplest model, is to have absorption. So if you have a warm gas cloud, it's going to have a 66-33 line ratio, probably less than 1. A line ratio of 1 corresponds to a rotational temperature of about 350 degrees Kelvin. But if you convert that into kinetic temperature, it's many thousands of degrees Kelvin. At thousands of degrees Kelvin, we don't know if the ammonia is even staying around anymore. So 1 is a good cutoff, a line ratio of 1. So you have a hot cloud, say 500K, it'll have a line ratio a little bit under 1. Then you stick in front of it a cool cloud. Now the cool cloud, 30K, turns out to be ideal. The cool cloud will have a high population of ammonia 3-3 in it, but basically 0-6-6. So the optical depth at 3-3 is very high. It can be absorbed away very easily. The 6-6, the opacity is very, very low. It's just not populated yet at 30 Kelvin. It turns out 30 Kelvin is the best cloud temperature to do this at. It also turns out to be the temperature that most of these other clouds, these non-strange clouds, are in the region. So you can do that, and you can start getting infinite line ratios very easily. So we have this idea now that when we're having high line ratio gas, this strange feature, it's because there's absorption. There's absorption by cool intervening material along the line of sight. So we can go back now, and we can define two gas components. First, you have the low line ratio gas, the gas it's consistent with, or roughly, and this is just a rough feeling, with one cloud and LTE. And then you can have what we call high line ratio gas, where the line ratio exceeds 1, and we think this has to involve something to do with absorption. So where is this gas? Where is, you know, all the high line ratio gas? We can go back, look at the 6-6 data cube, tag each pixel in X, Y, and V with whether it's coming from high line ratio or low line ratio gas, split them out, and make two different velocity integrated maps. So one of 6-6 associated with high line ratios, and one of 6-6 associated with low line ratios, regular gas. And this is what we see. So here is a velocity integrated in contours line ratio gas profile using the 6-6. This is where 6-6 is in low line ratio gas. And all I want you to notice is that it looks very similar to the grayscale map underneath. That's the regular emission we were seeing in ammonia 1-1 and 2-2 and 3-3. This is gas behaving kind of normally. On the right, though, are the contours for the high line ratio gas. And again, they're all in the center. Just want to make that clear that, you know, once you separate each one pixel by pixel, you go through, where you get these high line ratios is confined to the central 2 parsecs. You don't get them in other places, you know, random places, low signal to noise areas in the map. So it's it's confined to within 2 parsecs from Sagittarius A star. So that's where it is. What is it doing is the obvious question. Make a position velocity cut. So cut through the data cube along this axis. From the north through Saturday star, very close to it, which is at 0, 0, and out through the north. And in this plot, we've designated the low line ratio and the high line ratio gas. The low line ratio gas is here in black. The high line ratio gas comes out as the light colors. I want you to notice that it's really breaking into distinct components here, not only spatially, as we saw on the last slide, but also kinematically. They look different. This slide, which has disappeared entirely, is unimportant, so that's okay. So, so what do we see? All I was going to say is that, again, as you pointed out, it's the high line ratio gas is not because the 6-6 has suddenly gotten brighter, it's because the 3-3 suddenly disappears. So what do we have? We can look at the features of this central region. So what do we see? There's three main components that I'm drawing your eye to here. The first one is the circumnuclear disk. Now, you may not have picked that out on your own, unless your favorite object's the circumnuclear disk, but that's it. And remember, it wasn't, I said earlier, it's not the obvious feature in ammonia maps. You can see it here. It's only these faint, tiny, faint emission. This is much stronger. So this is emission from a circumnuclear disk. If you plot HCN, which was the last page, it would lay right over here and here. So that's that. The second low line ratio feature is this vertical feature. So this is associated with the 20 kilometer per second giant molecular cloud. And if you know anything about the 20 kilometer per second giant molecular cloud, that's one of these 100,000 solar mass clouds coming in from the south, you've heard of the southern streamer, the idea that it was coming in and feeding the nucleus. So this is emission from the southern streamer. You can actually see the hyperfines here, by the way. Look at the hyperfines. Coming in, and then whoop, it comes out the other side, and it hasn't changed very much. So there's not a large velocity gradient. There's not an obvious twist in to connect to other features. And our best guess now is that the southern streamer is really just a projection along line of sight. It's material, it's going up, it's sitting there, and it's projected along the line of sight. And the reason something interesting happens in 3-3, why it suddenly disappears, is that suddenly you have some other absorption effect taking over. So that's probably a projected cloud. But this is the cloud we're interested in, right, for us today, this conference. What's going on here? So this cloud, first of all, it's rotating in the opposite sense to the circumnuclear disk. It is showing both rotation at about 40 kilometers per second per parsec, and the Hooke morphology. So a Hooke morphology is generally considered to be evidence of either rotation with infall or rotation with expansion. So a couple of things to notice because of that. First of all, to get this high line ratio gas, we had to have absorption. So if you have absorption, what's the chance of having a nice cloud with absorption running with, you know, enough column from plus 50 to minus 50 that's just sitting in along the line of sight, not really associated? Not very likely. So this absorbing layer in this cloud has to somehow be attached to the cloud, right? It's some shielded layer, cool layer of the cloud, and it's because it's covering the same velocity range. The other thing, so now you know you've got galactic center, I'll be that. You have warm region, you have the cool absorbing material, and it's either got to be expanding, since it's blue shifted, towards you, it's either expanding on the near side of a shell or contracting on the far side of a shell. Right? So we do not have, at this point, the spatial resolution to resolve that question. It's unclear, but hopefully in the future will be clear. One thing I do want to point out that's on another slide, it's apparently gotten corrupted, but you saw as an equation earlier. Is that if you look at the mini spiral, the new results by Pomard et al., looking at infrared emission in the mini spiral, this is also, and they find that instead of the mini spiral being an arc, it's more like a sheet, a saddle-shaped sheet, and you get an arc of the mini spiral when you have mini orbits lining up. You might think, well, maybe this is associated with that. It's not really either. To the best that we can tell, one's going in the positive direction, the other one's kind of going in the negative direction. So this is kinematically distinct, and we really don't see any obvious connection with another feature in the galactic center. So just to conclude, there's evidence for warm, dense molecular gas less than a parsec from Saturday star. It is true, I have not, it's in projection. It's you know, that's the bane of every astronomer. So it's less than one parsec from Saturday star in projection. The unphysical line ratios, the apparently unphysical line ratios, we believe, result from the absorption by a cool layer in the same cloud. And the cloud shows evidence for rotation and either expansion or contraction. I personally, with no data, prefer the expansion idea because you could think something happened, heats it up, and this is the cold, unaffected material, and now it naturally falls that you're on the cold side of the cloud. But we don't have any real data for that. So what would you like to do? You'd like to be able to look for real orbits, right? Does this have a shape of an orbit? Does this, you know, look like something we can actually model in some way? And all I want to say is that's what's in the works. So on the top, you can see it better over here. This is a 6 arc second resolution image of the same region. So we've had to downweight our original VLA data because there's so much extended emission. We have to account for that somehow. We downweight it. We use this longest baselines. But this is a 6 centimeter VLA-only image. And you can see that it's still not looking like anything particular. It doesn't obviously line up with the mini spiral. This goes actually between the northern and the eastern arcs. So not clear, doesn't really help too much. But the other thing is that we're coming. We're going to have the high resolution images. And I just want, this is a very preliminary image, but this is a VLA-GBT combined image. So you get the VLA data, you get the GBT data, that fills in your zero spacings. As you can see, once you start looking at these molecular tracers and you add in that zero spacings information, what does it look like? It looks like the dust map, right? It starts looking like things we're used to, not like some strange ring or not even like the lumpy things I showed before. You know, you get these giant molecular clouds, and then these features that I'm so interested in are really small features in the region. This is a 3-3 map, so it doesn't show the central core yet. Saturday star would be here, but this is part of the CND. So that should give you a sense in terms of the circumnuclear disk's importance as well in this region. Yes, it's very close, but don't forget, a lot of the mass is out here. And we're also doing a search for high velocity 6-6 with a graduate student at Columbia, and we're waiting for the EVLA so we can match the GBT's beautiful spectral resolution, as you could tell we didn't have. So I'll take questions. And I didn't find out what the time thing was. Yeah.
So if you had to estimate the total mass inflow rate into the central end parsec, say, of molecular gas, what would it be?
Currently? I refuse.
See these clouds.
Yeah, I refuse. So I'll tell you why.
Well,
no. Yeah. You say 100. You have such a simple model. Okay, so theorist, warning. So, okay, here's the deal. We've got giant molecular clouds, beautiful, right? Reservoir of gas. You got Sagittae East. So Sagittae East, if you look at the kinematics of these gas, the northern ridge, the western streamer, the 50 kilometer per second cloud, are all being impacted by the supernova remnant. Now, the 50 kilometer per second molecular cloud doesn't care too much about it, but these clouds are all currently getting pushed away. All their kinematic evidence shows they're getting pushed away. So, you know, maybe this is, I didn't talk about this today, but you know, maybe this is part of the clue, but for that reason, I refuse to estimate an inflow rate. how much mass? So, like I said, these are 100,000 solar masses. The best estimate for things like the Western Streamer and the Northern Ridge is about 1,000 solar masses. This feature in the center, it's hard to estimate, but in order to get the high line ratios we see, you need dense gas because you need to populate the 6-6 close to the kinetic temperature. How dense? 10 to the fifth. 10 to the fifth particles per cubic centimeter. More than 10 to the 5 in this whole region. But I just want to say that it's like a 6 arc second beam pocket in that region might be like 100 solar masses. And that's kind of the size of little globs we see in there. Weigh 100,000 or 1,000,000 solar masses. Yeah, right. Not in, no, upper, big upper limit of, you know, 1,000,000. 10 parsecs, 10, 15 parsecs. Let's talk.
You understand any mechanism that could produce a along the park, a hot gas surrounded by blue gas.
Some kind of outflowy winds, some kind of impact on a molecular cloud. So I don't know if you can do it. Yeah, I mean, I can make up all kinds of particular interactions of clouds that might produce a shock layer, but the back layer is not disturbed much yet. I don't have a good model, and the reason I haven't actually stressed too much about that yet is that at the resolution of the images I was showing you the first part of the talk, 15 arc seconds, I just can't see any of the morphology. So once I can come up with a theory I can actually rule out if it's wrong, then I think I'll start coming out with theories.
There's some spot where the hot gas.
Yeah, so the best guess right now, looking at the GBT data but not combining it, is that this hot feature is not going to have much extended emission at all. So I think the picture in your head to have, having not reduced the data at all, is little ribbons or something of this hot stuff. And that's kind of, I don't know, once I see that, I think it's an interesting question to figure out how it's made. Oh,
I just want to name this model the corn dog.
Corn dog model, why? But you don't know what it's doing on the other side. So it could be a half-eaten corn dog.
Anyone else?
I don't know. But
Roman, about 10 years ago, the flurry of activity on the high-negative velocity gap.
We're looking for that.
Directly
like minus 185. We're looking. So my graduate student who's worked. So the velocity ranges I had today were about minus, I forgot to mention that, sorry, plus or minus about 120, because we had to catch the CND. With a VLA, it's extraordinarily limited in order to doing spectroscopic surveys. So we have like 10 kilometers per second resolution. So we have plus or minus 120 kilometers per second. So what we're doing now, though, is I have a graduate student at Columbia who's actually reducing the data as we speak, looking for high velocity gas in either direction. We've searched from negative 300 to plus 200 kilometers per second. So we'll see. Next conference, yeah.
Bye.
You gotta have an excitation temperature to get the column density. You gotta have an opacity. If that, I don't have an opacity because I can't detect, because it's not detected in a lower transition, and because the amount of the population of the hyperfine satellite lines goes down dramatically. So it's I know it's less than 1% of the emissions in hyperfines at 3.3. It's much less than that in the hyperfines at 6.6, and that's the best way to estimate the opacity. So since we don't have the lower lines, it's all absorbed away. We can't do it. So.
And one last question.
You had to say what the random velocity of the molecular gas is. Typically.
You mean like line width?
Yeah,
within it? 20 kilometers per second.
So it's a little bit higher than
local. Oh yeah, it's a good 20. It's 20 kilometers per second everywhere. In here, it's 15 to 20 kilometers per second line width here. And features that are one of the reasons we know the Western Streamer, besides its kinematics, its velocity profile, that it's being blown out by the supernova remnant, it also has a line width higher, something like 25, 30 kilometers per second in that.
This warm molecular gas in the very central projection in the very central region?
So initially, when we first detected this gas, we looked at spectra and we thought it had line widths of like 80 kilometers per second. But you have a big beam and you have a huge velocity gradient. So if you measure it right in the turn of the hook, it's about 20 kilometers per second, so it's consistent with the stuff outside.
Yeah.